This is Side 6 of Macular Degeneration by Lilas G. Mock, M.D. and Marja Mock, Ph.D. Continuing on page 225. Your reader for this side is Sue Garrison. Chapter 7. 16 Tips for Family and Friends. A faithful friend is the medicine of life. Ecclesiasticus, chapter 6, verse 16. Many family members and friends of people with AMD have asked me what they can do to help. Here are 16 tips. Number 1. Be direct about vision. Ask your friend or family member what they can and can't see so that you know. Don't worry about using phrases that emphasize vision, like, "Did you see Zelda yesterday?" Number 2. Identify yourself and say hello. Take the initiative to say hello and identify yourself when you see your family member or friend. And don't always assume that other seniors can see you. At the very least, one out of every 12 seniors over 75 has low vision. Number 3. Say everything you want to convey. Give clear verbal directions and avoid vague replies like, "It's over there." Don't assume that your friend or family member can read your facial expressions or gestures. Express your reactions aloud. Say everything that you want the other person to know. Number 4. Use black felt tip or ink pens and print in clear lettering. Always write notes or letters to your family member or friend in black felt tip or ink pen or black computer print. Print clearly in letters large enough for your friend or family member to see. Don't use colored paper or pens, ballpoint pens or pencils, since they're very difficult to see. For birthdays and holidays, consider calling instead of sending a card. Number 5. Give low vision gifts. Consider giving low vision gifts such as talking calculators, watches, clocks, thermometers, weight scales, and computer software. You could also give large button or automatic dialing phones or large print cards, clocks, calendars, or address books. There are all kinds of other gifts to choose from in the low vision catalogs listed in Appendix C. Alternatively, consider giving a book on tape or tickets to a concert or helping purchase a CCTV. Number 6. Keep the environment predictable. A predictable environment makes a big difference for anyone with low vision. Many people can compensate for less vision by relying on their knowledge of the environment. Help your friend or family member keep his or her home, and yours if you live together, as predictable as possible. Keep frequently used items like house keys, salt shakers, and trash bags in designated places. Put things away after you use them, and close cupboard and stairwell doors. If you are a guest, return any item you move to the place you found it, even a coffee table book that looks merely decorative. If the color of the book contrasts with the coffee table, your friend or family member may be using it to see the coffee table more clearly. Number 7. Offer your arm. Don't take theirs. When you walk with your friend or family member, offer your arm. Don't take his or her arm because you may throw them off balance. This guideline for walking applies to all of low vision life. Offer help where it's necessary, but don't just do it yourself. Number 8. Don't just do for your parent. Enable your parent to do as much for him or herself as possible. Don't assume that because of low vision your parent isn't capable, and don't foster that assumption in your parent. If your parent wants to take out the trash, walk to the cleaners, mow the lawn, cook a family dinner, volunteer at a local center, or run a manufacturing company, so much the better. As busy adult children, we often feel like less responsibility would be a relief for us, so that must be true for our parents. But having nothing to work toward can be deathly boring. Too much responsibility is stressful, but too little is unhealthy. Don't take away anyone's reason for having to be up and about in the morning. And don't take away anyone's ability to help you. Take the time you would have spent doing your parents' chores and share some activity you both enjoy. Number 9. Share activities you both enjoy. Find new or old activities that please both of you. Call your friend or family member and make a date. Here are a few suggestions. Dine out. Attend a wine tasting or food fair. Go to the symphony, the opera, or a jazz concert. Visit a botanical garden or garden together in the yard. Golf, bowl, swim, lift weights, walk in the park. Listen to a book on tape or a radio show together. Do a crossword puzzle together. Play cards, chess, checkers, or large print Scrabble. Demonstrate at a political rally. Get facials and manicures. Go to a lecture series, a book reading, or a poetry reading. Go to a baseball or football game. You can also listen to commentary on the radio, either at home or in the stadium. Take yoga, stretching classes, tai chi, water aerobics, or meditation classes. Start or join a salon, discussion group, or support group. Attend religious services. Volunteer at a local charity. Sail or skydive, with a qualified instructor, of course. Number 10. Encourage interests. When you lose vision, you don't lose your physical or mental energy. Encourage your friend or family member to maintain old interests and cultivate new ones. Encourage hobbies, volunteer work, membership in senior clubs or support groups, and reading and listening to broadcasts, books, newspaper articles, and magazines. See Appendix B for the many options and services available. We so often think of paid jobs or parenting as significant, and hobbies or interests as optional, but they're not. Everybody needs to be a part of their community, be aware of it, and be alive in it. When you're younger, jobs and parenting may take up most of your time, but when you're a senior, you have time for other interests. And whatever you spend your time doing is just as important for the quality of your life today as your job was for the quality of your life in earlier years. For adult children especially, retirement may look like heaven, and having no role may seem like sweet relief. But just being retired without any interests or just living comfortably in a tidy apartment without much stimulation, or just coping with low vision as a full-time preoccupation, is a short-term recipe for boredom and a long-term recipe for personal distress and crisis. Being alive is the sum total of our actions, mental and physical, in this world. Be active. Encourage action. Number 11. Realize the importance of friends. If you are a friend, realize how important you are. If you are an adult child, realize that everyone needs friends. We are so used to thinking of family as our fortress, and friends as nice, but not as necessary, that we may discount their importance. While family is often our fortress, friends may be equally so, and sometimes even more important for seniors' happiness and longevity. I often meet seniors who have moved out of their communities and into apartments in their adult children's neighborhoods. The move initially solves a number of problems. The adult child feels more confident caring for his or her parent. The parent feels safer, and keeping accurate banking records and troubleshooting with doctors may be easier. But over time, as the adult child returns to his or her responsibilities, working full-time or shuttling children to school, the senior parent spends the vast majority of the day alone. Without any friends, seniors are prone to loneliness regardless of how much their adult children try to meet their needs. And loneliness is not a good thing. It does not make you very excited about living, and may even lead to clinical depression. Keeping old friends and making new ones should be at the very top of the priority list when considering living arrangements. I strongly recommend that seniors stay connected to their local communities, move to senior residences that feature plenty of social events, and encourage meeting people, or actively work to make new friends, join new groups, and engage in new activities with others wherever they move. Adult children would do their parents a greater service, helping them make or keep friends, than almost anything else. Number 12. Watch for depression. Depression is very common among people with macular degeneration. Many people experience a short period of depression as they adjust to vision loss, but many others experience prolonged periods of depression. Be aware of changes in your friends' or family members' emotional state, sleeping patterns, weight, or behavior. Excessive worry, bouts of crying, listlessness or disinterest, low motivation, pessimism or snippiness, social withdrawal, a refusal to communicate, or an excessively stiff upper lip, moping, and helplessness all may signal depression. Depression is not healthy for anyone. See Chapter 6 and talk directly to your friend or family member about your concerns. If your spouse or parent appears depressed, make an appointment with his or her doctor, pursue visual rehabilitation, and get your loved one out into the world or involved in new activities, even if you have to give a gentle push. Number 13. Take care of yourself, too. If you are married to or living with someone who has vision loss, you may be at risk for depression, too. So be your own best friend, too, and look out for your well-being by following the same steps you would for your loved one. Even if you're fine, you may feel like your life is turned upside down sometimes, or you're faced with challenges you hadn't expected and you need some support. That's why visual rehabilitation should be for families, too. See if your local program has a family support group, or consider starting your own using the guidelines in Chapter 6. You may also want to join one of the macular degeneration organizations listed in Appendix A, or the online community, MD People. The more active you are with your spouse, partner, or roommate in visual rehabilitation, the better both your lives will be. Number 14. Participate in visual rehabilitation. Participating in visual rehabilitation, in the broadest sense, means fostering a sense of independence, self-determination, and joy. That does not mean that people who are successfully pursuing visual rehabilitation need to prove that they can do it all by themselves, live on their own, or get a volunteer job. But it does mean living as fully as possible. There are many practical things you can do to be a part of your family member or friend's visual rehabilitation. Here are just a few suggestions. Read a chapter from Part 3 of this book together, and work as a team to implement the suggestions. This may include rearranging the furniture, closets, or clothing, taping down area rugs, installing new lighting fixtures, choosing contrasting tablecloths or dishes, or labeling dials, bottles, electronics, and appliances. Encourage your friend or family member to continue reading by completing the reading workshop in Chapter 10 together. Help set up a well-lit reading space and facilitate trying new visual aids like a CCTV. Encourage participation in the NLS or CNIB library program. See Appendix B. If you have a computer, consider reprinting your friend or family member's recipes or addresses in large type and collecting them in a binder or having them bound at a copy shop. Alternatively, help set up a computer workstation with internet access and low-vision software. See Appendix C. Encourage your friend or family member to exercise regularly. Help your friend or family member learn to use public transportation. If you live together, tell your friend or family member what he or she can do to help you with chores or other responsibilities. Talk directly to your friend or family member about his or her experiences and feelings about low vision. Talk about your feelings, too. Number 15. Help start a support group. Support groups are a fantastic way to build community. At a low vision support group, your friend or family member would have the chance to talk to people who have walked a mile in his or her shoes and can understand the experience. Support groups are great places to vent, to laugh, to get new solutions for daily challenges, and new ideas for living. They're also important sources of support for spouses or roommates of people with vision loss. It's very comforting to talk to the natives, as author Bernie Siegel calls anyone who shares a common experience with you. Contact your local visual rehabilitation program to ask about support groups, or join the internet community MD People. See Appendix A. If there is no support group in your area, that doesn't mean there aren't any other people with low vision there. It just means that no one is getting the benefit of a support group. Why not help start one? See Chapter 6 for guidelines. Number 16. Keep your sense of humor. We are all prone to take life too seriously. Very few people get to the end of their lives wishing they had been more earnest, more worried, or more self-conscious. We all try so hard to get it right the first time, to avoid misfortune and mistakes, to look good in public. Sometimes we forget to laugh. Laugh from your belly and let your friend or family member see the daily humor in this busy, unpredictable, ridiculous, profound, heartbreaking, and heartwarming experience we call living. Chapter 8. I see purple flowers everywhere. The many visions of Charles Bonnet syndrome. Do you ever see anything you know is not there but looks real anyway? I asked Sam Weinberg when he came to the Low Vision Living program. No, he said, looking at his wife Rachel and fidgeting with his sweater. Oh, I said casually. I just asked because many people with macular degeneration see things they know are not there. I call it phantom vision, but the technical term is Charles Bonnet syndrome. Is this syndrome an early sign of Alzheimer's? Sam asked pointedly, still looking at Rachel. Rachel began to look at the clock on the wall. They had been in our office for nearly 2 hours, and Rachel felt it was already past lunchtime. She picked up her coat. Absolutely not, I said firmly. Charles Bonnet syndrome has nothing to do with mental agility or stability. When you have phantom vision, your mind is fine. It's your eyes that are playing tricks on you. It's a side effect of low vision. Well, Sam admitted quickly, I see little monkeys with red hats and blue coats playing in the front yard. I've seen them for 18 months. What? Rachel's eyes about popped out of her head and she dropped her coat. Little monkeys in the front yard? Well, Sam continued, sometimes I see them in the living room, too. What is Charles Bonnet syndrome? Charles Bonnet was an 18th century Swiss naturalist and philosopher whose grandfather Charles Lulin had low vision from cataracts. In 1769, Bonnet described his grandfather's curious experience of seeing men, women, birds, and buildings that he knew were not there. Later in his life, Bonnet's own vision also deteriorated, and he experienced phantom visions similar to his grandfather's. How could this happen? Curiously, Charles Bonnet's discovery didn't capture medical attention at the time. But 150 years later, in the 1930s, his files were dusted off, and he was credited with being the first person to describe the syndrome that came to be named for him. The medical origins of Charles Bonnet syndrome, however, remained unclear. Today, there are several suggested causes. The most convincing holds that the syndrome is analogous to phantom limb phenomena. People who have a limb amputated may still feel their toes or fingers or itching on an arm that no longer exists. This happens because the limb's nerves are still active, spontaneously firing signals to the brain, which the brain dutifully interprets. So too with the eyes. When retinal cells become impaired and are no longer able to receive and relay visual images to the brain, or when any other element of the visual system ceases to function optimally, the system begins firing off images on its own. The funny thing about these images is that they are often not related to a person's life at all. Sam's monkeys, for example, were entirely original creations. He couldn't remember ever seeing these monkeys before, and he wasn't a particular fan of monkeys anyway. He found them surprising at first, especially since they seemed so vivid and lifelike. But after a while, they became amusing. Since they were so clearly not real monkeys, Sam wasn't too worried about his own mind, but he was afraid that others would be, especially Rachel. How common is Charles Bonnet syndrome? This syndrome is very common. Studies place the number somewhere between 10% and 40% of people with low vision. 20% of my low vision patients have Charles Bonnet syndrome. My research suggests that it is more likely to appear if you have a visual acuity between 20 over 120 and 20 over 400. See Chapter 1 for an explanation of the 20/20 visual acuity measurement scale. This may be because eyes with a visual acuity between these two measurements still have a great deal of power, but aren't receiving or relaying as many images from the world as they used to. As a result, they may be adding some images of their own. We have no reliable way to know ahead of time whether you will see images, how frequently these images will occur, or how long they will last. You may never experience Charles Bonnet syndrome. You may have it for only a few months, or you may have it for years. You may see images only a few times a month, or a few times a week for a few minutes, or you may see images every day. Are you sure this has nothing to do with psychiatry? Yes, phantom vision or Charles Bonnet syndrome is properly a side effect of vision loss only. Unfortunately, since ophthalmologists have rarely investigated this syndrome in the 20th century, some psychiatric studies have used the term to describe people with visual hallucinations, people with normal vision who see things they believe are actually real. To set the record straight, I'd like to return to the 6 criteria for Charles Bonnet syndrome outlined by Navel in 1873. You can use them to determine whether or not you are experiencing phantom vision. Do the images that appear to you have the following 6 characteristics? Number 1. They occur when you are fully conscious and wide awake, often during broad daylight. Number 2. They do not deceive you. You are aware that they are not real. Number 3. They occur in combination with normal perception. For example, you may see a sidewalk clearly, but find it covered with dots, flowers, or faces. Number 4. They're exclusively visual and do not appear in combination with any sounds or bizarre sensations. Number 5. They appear and disappear without obvious cause. Number 6. They're amusing or annoying, but not grotesque. Since ophthalmology has paid so little attention to Charles Bonnet syndrome, many doctors don't realize how common it really is, and some may not be familiar with it at all. When I gave a poster presentation of the drawings in this chapter at the American Academy of Ophthalmology's annual meeting in the fall of 1997, several ophthalmologists stopped to express their surprise at hearing about phantom vision for the first time. What do people with Charles Bonnet syndrome see? A 1994 Dutch study of Charles Bonnet syndrome listed the following images seen by participants: miniature chimney sweeps, farmers, strolling children, teddy bears, windmills, chairs, women in woolly hats, and men in striped pajamas. My patients at Low Vision Living have reported seeing cartoon characters, flowers in the bathroom sink, hands rubbing each other, waterfalls and mountains, tigers, maple trees in vibrant autumn foliage, yellow polka dots, row houses, a dinner party, and brightly colored balloons. Many people see faces or life-size figures that they've never seen before. One of the most remarkable qualities of these figures is that they almost always wear pleasant expressions and often make eye contact with the viewer. Menacing behavior, grotesque shapes, and scenes of violent conflict are not, to my knowledge, a part of this syndrome. Usually the same image or set of images reappears to each person, sometimes in the same place or at the same time of day. Sam's monkeys usually materialized around sunset, cavorting across the lawn or around the big blue easy chair by the fireplace. They stayed for 10 or 20 minutes several times a week for 2 years, and then began to appear less frequently. Sometimes the images change or multiple images appear. While Sam saw only monkeys, Joe Toscano saw chestnut horses and small rabbits on the kitchen walls. They were soon replaced by willow trees at a riverbank. Sometimes the images are exactly to scale, and sometimes larger or smaller than life. Sometimes the images become smaller the farther away they appear, and sometimes they become larger. Joe's horses looked like children's toys at a distance of 10 feet, but as they galloped outside, they became Clydesdales and then stallions worthy of Gulliver. Treating Charles Bonnet Syndrome. Fortunately, most people find Charles Bonnet Syndrome largely untroubling. Since the images it produces are usually pretty or lighthearted, many actually find them amusing or enjoyable. If, however, you find yourself frustrated or anxious, do not hesitate to discuss phantom vision with your doctor. Although no drug treatment has been demonstrated to work for everyone, the best option appears to be low-dose Haldol. Usually explanation and reassurance are sufficient. Sometimes Charles Bonnet syndrome images can become confused with dream images. For example, several of my patients have reported frightening moments when they thought they saw a man standing in their bedroom or hallway. These men, however, were often dark-clad or indistinct figures that appeared as the patient was relaxing on a couch, dozing, or in bed waiting to fall asleep or just awaking. These figures were probably residual dream images that reflected very normal fears of crime or loneliness. They are not, however, typical of Charles Bonnet syndrome. As Zelda Grant put it, "Shadowy men in my bedroom? Huh, don't be ridiculous. I see fully dressed Canadian Mounties in my bedroom, with long gold sabers, big gold buttons, and stiff-brimmed blue hats. They have nice wide shoulders. They're a good-looking group." A Charles Bonnet Portrait Gallery. When Grace Olson came to Low Vision Living, I asked her the same question I asked Sam Weinberg. Do you ever see anything you know is not there but looks real anyway? She eyed me dryly. "Yes," she said with an air of great patience, "but my problem is that I can't see things that are there. I do not much care if the kitchen sink is full of American flags. I would like to know how I can see my granddaughter's photo." Touché! Grace was right, of course, but she was also surprised and comforted to hear that other people with low vision saw things in their sinks, too. Like Sam and Rachel Weinberg, Grace had never heard of Charles Bonnet syndrome before. She supposed she might be the only one, so she had never shared the images she saw. After I opened a set of felt-tip markers, we spent some time together talking about low vision and about the extraordinary set of flags, plaids, and bars of music Grace saw everywhere. The vivid colors Grace used to draw her patterns helped me understand her experience in greater detail. As she drew, Grace talked about her years as a young documentary artist for the Works Progress Administration during the Depression, and her love of all things blue, irises, jays, and oceans. Her words made me wonder anew at what a strange and stunning gift sight really is. What things we have seen, what things we remember, and what things we never expected to see. Since Grace left her drawings with me, I've asked other people with macular degeneration to depict the images they see and to talk about their experience with Charles Bonnet syndrome. I'd like to share their drawings and words with you. Grace Olson's turquoise squares and bars of music. I was in the hospital a few years ago for pneumonia. I remember sitting in my bed waiting for lunch when I saw light turquoise and lime green squares on the ceiling. That's strange, I thought. But I wasn't feeling well, so I just closed my eyes. A few weeks later, I was mixing salad dressing in the kitchen, and the same checkered pattern reappeared on the floor. Now I see it everywhere. Sometimes it's quite small, a few inches at most, and sometimes it covers a whole bedspread. I can't remember ever seeing these squares in my life. I thought they might be from one of my drawings or photographs, but I never drew abstract patterns, and my photographs were always black and white. Then I thought they came from a quilt. I used to quilt with a group, and often toured antique shops. But the lime green in this check is too rich, too goldish or brownish tinted, more like an abstract painting than a color of thread. After I became quite used to the checks, I began to see an ornate bar of music. Good grief! That's all I could think. I spent my childhood praying that my mother would let me give up the piano. I hated practicing so much. Why in the world would I see a bar of music? I've tried to read the music I see, but it doesn't seem to play a particular tune. Just shapes, decorative shapes. Zelda Grant's Red Brick Building. When I was a child in North Carolina during the Depression, I had a very old maiden aunt, Isabel. I thought she didn't have much fun because she never ate cake when she came to our house. She lived in a red brick home for the elderly. I believe that if you didn't have any money, they sent you there. I remember my parents whispering to one another about money and debts. I would listen at the door and wonder if we were all going to live with Isabel and if we would be able to eat any more cake. When I saw the red brick building, I thought of Isabel. I first saw it in the spring when my daughter and I were driving to Wilmington. I didn't mention it at first because it looked like a classic southern building. But then it reappeared in the next town and the next day. I saw it all along the highway. At first, I was worried. Not too worried, though, because I knew it really wasn't there. I just wasn't sure why I saw it so clearly. Then it began to amuse me. I would look for it tucked behind a farm or a row of Main Street shops. Honestly, it's very pretty, very graceful architecturally. The landscape would be much improved if they built a few of them. I saw it for 6 or 8 months, but I haven't seen it in a while. Rosa Garcia's Flowering Trees. They are beautiful, these flowers. Large, vibrant pink blooms, decorating trees with no leaves, as if flowers always grew in the wintertime. When I first saw them, I loved them. This is impossible, I thought. It was autumn. There were leaves on the ground. We were on the train to Toronto. I watched these flowers for a while, then I turned to my friend Barbara and told her what I was seeing. I remember being quite enthusiastic, although I wasn't sure I should be saying so much. She just sort of stared at me. Then I made the mistake of telling her about the chain-link fences. I had been seeing chain-link fences everywhere. Well, many places they shouldn't be. They were okay. But the pink flowers were beautiful. Barbara just stared at me even harder. Then she asked a few questions about how long I had been seeing fences and flowers and where they appeared. She didn't seem any more comfortable with my answers. For some reason, though, I didn't really care. I just stopped telling people about them. You have to be careful what you say. Buddy Burmester's Purple Flowers and Blackbirds. I see purple flowers in my bathroom sink, and sometimes on my pants, which is a little compromising. Since no one else sees them, though, I'm not so embarrassed. But can you imagine golf pants with purple flowers? I'd look like one of those hippies. I also see blackbirds, powerful things, flying in sets of threes. My cousin Harry has macular degeneration, too. He sees frogs in his bathtub and a pretty blonde woman standing on his back porch, which is very funny. Harry was never a very successful ladies' man. My purple flowers and blackbirds are not half as interesting as frogs in the bathtub and a woman on the back porch. I said to him, Harry, maybe she's a Radio City Music Hall rockette who made a detour through New Jersey. Could be, he says. She looks like a rockette is supposed to look. Too bad she's not really there. You ought to talk to Harry. He's not too unhappy about the whole thing. Mary Flannery and Dolly Kowalski both saw figures of people. Although they could not draw these figures accurately enough to convey the tangible reality with which they originally appeared, I've included their descriptions because the figures are so representative of Charles Bonnet syndrome. Mary Flannery's Elizabethan Dinner Party. I was born in Belfast in 1928. My parents died just before the war, so I went to live in Boston with my Uncle Liam. My mother, of course, never liked the British. But I always loved the theater, and I loved Shakespeare. I used to dress up in my aunt's old dresses and pretend I was Juliet, and Romeo was on his way over to the house. I don't think that has anything to do with my Elizabethan dinner party, though. That's what I call it. I see these very formal, earnest people sitting around my dining room table in full Elizabethan dress. Their outfits are made of bright, jeweled fabrics with lots of lace, high collars, and pinched V-shaped waists. They look like they belong on stage or in the Queen's Court. They're not talkative, they don't seem hungry, and they don't seem upset. Actually, they appear to think it's perfectly natural to sit around my dining room table. They irritate me sometimes, but I think my mother would probably roll over in her grave. Dolly Kowalski's Little Girls with Pink Bows. I see little girls with pink bows playing in my yard. At first there was only one little girl, but after a while she had several playmates. Now they come almost every evening for 15 minutes or so and play with one another. They laugh and jump around. They're so delightful, so cheerful, so active. Their little white dresses and pink bows blow in the wind. I see them so incredibly clearly, much more clearly than I see anything else now. I enjoy seeing the details of their dresses and the expressions on their faces. I know that they aren't real, but you wouldn't believe how realistic they seem, how lively and pretty they are. I wish you could see them the way I do. Part 3. Addressing AMD. Chapter 9. Why Visual Rehabilitation is Right for You. You must do the thing you think you cannot do. Eleanor Roosevelt. When we begin to take our failures non-seriously, it means we are ceasing to be afraid of them. It is of immense importance to learn to laugh at ourselves. Catherine Mansfield. If you have any degree of vision loss, or if you anticipate vision loss in the near future, visual rehabilitation is already right for you, because it empowers you with the skills and knowledge that will allow you to continue your life and make your own decisions about your future. However, Medicare will pay for services only when your vision is 20/70 or less, and many state and private agencies require a vision of 20/200 or less. If you do not meet these minimums, you can still start your own visual rehabilitation by reading the chapters in this part of the book, learning their content, and adopting those elements you like. Early visual rehabilitation may have tremendous benefits, not the least of which is lowering your risk of depression with macular degeneration and ensuring a higher quality of life in the coming years. What does visual rehabilitation include? Visual rehabilitation is just like rehabilitation for any other kind of impairment. If you suffer a minor stroke that impairs the use of your right arm, you will receive occupational therapy. You'll be trained to do all the daily activities you need to do without relying heavily on that arm. Low vision affects at least as many daily activities as the loss of your right arm, so visual rehabilitation provides comparable training. Visual rehabilitation includes training in using your peripheral vision to read and training for daily activities. Visual rehabilitation also includes adapting your home with lighting, labels, and low vision products. And it includes professional fitting for visual aids, such as magnifiers and high-power lenses, and training in their use. It may also include counseling and support groups. Since visual rehabilitation for adults is a relatively new field, programs vary in their scope and quality. Some places offer only visual aids. Others offer more. That's why it's important to locate all of the services for which you are eligible so that you have the best experience. Visual rehabilitation is not resignation. Sometimes people fear that if they pursue visual rehabilitation, they're resigning themselves to low vision, giving up on a possible cure, and giving up on their future. But visual rehabilitation is not about resignation. It's about figuring out what you would enjoy doing, pursuing it with whatever means are available, learning new skills, and letting self-judgment go. It's about having choices and influencing your life today. It's not about precluding choices that may be available tomorrow. Anyone pursuing visual rehabilitation can tell you that it doesn't foster resignation. Far from it. Visual rehabilitation, at its best, fosters courage. The courage to try new things and keep your sense of humor. It fosters commitment. The willingness to stick with it and do the most you can. And visual rehabilitation fosters confidence. The belief that you can do more than you think you can. Right here, right now. And you can. Finding a visual rehabilitation program in your area. If there is a rehabilitation program in your area, be sure to go. They will provide invaluable hands-on training and additional resources or advice. To find a program in your area, follow the steps outlined in Appendix A. If there is no program in your area, the rehabilitation workshop in this book is designed to be your personal home version of our program here in Michigan. You can also use this book as a supplement to another program or to appointments with a low-vision optometrist who can fit you with optical aids. Your home visual rehabilitation program. Your home rehabilitation program includes 5 chapters, each covering a different topic: lighting, reading with low vision, magnifiers, telescopes, computers, driving, transportation alternatives, and traveling, and adapting your home and interacting with your community. Although each chapter can be understood independently, the chapters were written to build upon one another. As a result, each chapter assumes that you know the information covered in the previous one. For example, Chapter 14, which talks about adaptations you can make to your home, assumes that you already know about the lighting information covered in Chapter 10 and the magnifier information covered in Chapter 12. For this reason, it's best to proceed through each chapter in the order in which they are presented. This is particularly true for Chapter 11, your reading workshop, which must be followed exactly as presented. You may also want to order the free low-vision product catalogs listed in Appendix C and browse through them as you work through the program. Working with a family member or friend. Most of this rehabilitation program doesn't directly call for assistance from friends or family. However, many suggestions do assume that you have someone who can lend a helping hand, especially with things like rearranging furniture, buying and installing new lighting fixtures, and learning the bus system. The reading workshop in Chapter 11 also requires a partner. You may want to skim through the whole program first with a friend or family member to determine which parts you already know, which you may be able to do on your own or with minimal assistance, and which parts will take more time. You may already have one family member or friend who can serve as a partner for the whole program. If not, consider asking several different people to each help with a small portion. To accommodate everyone's schedules, consider setting up dates in advance for reading chapters or working on different tasks or tips. This approach may be particularly helpful for the reading workshop, which requires mastering several different separate lessons. Working with friends or family members on visual rehabilitation can also make the program more enjoyable, and they'll learn a lot too. In fact, there are several tips for friends and family along the way. Supplies for Chapter 11, Your Reading Workshop. 1 thick black felt tip pen, 1 package of at least 60 plain white 3x5 index cards, 1 package of ready-made stick-on sticky black letters, 1 to 1.5 inches high. Sticky letters are available at most office supply shops. If you cannot find them, you can use your black felt tip marking pens to print individual letters. 5 to 10 pages of an article from your favorite magazine, or a book chapter enlarged on a quality copier with sharp black ink on white paper, just large enough so that you can read the words. Supplies for Chapter 14, Saving Sight at Home and in Your Community. 1 medium width black permanent marker, 1 package of large rubber bands, 1 small package of safety pins, large black, white, and bright neon orange stickers, ready-made stick-on sticky black letters 1 to 2 inches high, or higher if they are more easily readable, 1 tube each of black, white, and orange puff paint. Puff paint is available at many fabric stores and is sometimes marketed as fabric or t-shirt paint. You can squeeze it onto fabric, metal, or other surfaces for labeling. Since it dries slightly puffy, you can also feel it. Supplies to purchase and have handy. Chapter 11, Your Reading Workshop, and Chapter 14, Saving Sight at Home and in Your Community, both call for a small collection of inexpensive supplies. You can find almost everything on both of these lists at a local office supply store. You may want to collect them before you begin your rehabilitation program. Supplies to gather for yourself. Now that you are starting your visual rehabilitation program and purchasing the supplies you need for various chapters, don't forget the most important supplies of all, the ones you need for you. Visual rehabilitation can make living easier, but it does take some determination and courage. And like all things worth having in life, it takes some work and some humor, too. You've got all the skills and qualities you'll need, but gathering them together as you start your program and keeping them at your fingertips will help you have a positive, empowering experience. Remember, you do have choices. You can influence the quality of your life. Beginning a visual rehabilitation program and committing to living fully in the world, in whatever way is best for you, are choices to positively influence the quality of your life. You can do it. I know you can. Supplies for you. The 3 C's. Courage. Trying new things and keeping your sense of humor. Commitment. Sticking with it and doing the most you can. Confidence. Believing you can do more than you think you can. Chapter 10. Making Things Brighter. Lighting. I never knew a light bulb could make such a difference. Adina Williams. Lighting goes with everything. Doing something? You need good light. That's the bottom line. But it's surprising how little we actually think about light or realize that we can dramatically change the lighting in our own home. Every week, occupational therapist Annie Rittering and I meet people who don't realize that they need more light now than they used to. One new patient sent me back to the office when I arrived at her house for a rehabilitation appointment, Annie told me recently. We had talked the week before over the phone, and she listened to everything I said about light. When I arrived for our appointment, she greeted me with a big smile and said, "Annie, you're not going to believe this, but I changed every light bulb in my house, and now I'm seeing things I haven't seen in a year." Another patient, to her amazement, found herself able to read print twice as small as she usually could by using the directed light of a gooseneck desk lamp. Not all problems can be solved so easily, but increasing lighting and reducing glare will help tremendously. Reducing glare. If you have macular degeneration, you may be sensitive to glare, especially from fluorescent lights or sunlight. This happens because macular degeneration may affect your eye's ability to modulate light. You can reduce glare by choosing softer light sources, like incandescent lights over fluorescent lights, or by changing your position in relationship to the light source. For example, facing sunlight may be much less comfortable than facing away, and allowing the sunlight to fall over your shoulder or come from the side if you are using a magnifier. Shiny book pages are often much more difficult to look at than matte finished pages. The same is true of highly polished furniture and floors. They can produce glare where carpeting, secured area rugs, and upholstered furniture would not. Reducing glare is an important component of good lighting in your home. If you are extremely glare sensitive, you may choose to do some things like dining at home or in restaurants with less light than we recommend in this chapter. You may also choose to reduce the amount of sunlight in your home. As with every aspect of visual rehabilitation, the trick is to make the environment comfortable for you. The one-day observation. You may already be aware of exactly when and where you need to add light or reduce glare in your home. But oftentimes we unconsciously adjust to low lighting without realizing that we are living with less light than we really need. Lighting conditions in our homes and our lighting needs also change depending upon the time of day and the type of activity we are pursuing. To help identify your home lighting conditions and lighting needs, take one day to observe lighting in your home by walking through it three times, once in the early morning, once in the afternoon, and once in the evening. If you live in an area with variable weather or seasons, you may want to observe your home more than once to see how changes in outdoor lighting affect your ability to see inside. Notice the following. Number 1. Which areas of your home have only medium or low lighting? Are your stairwells, porches, and closets adequately lit? Do you have bright, focused light in the areas where you do detailed work, like reading or cooking? Number 2. Which areas receive a great deal of sunlight and which do not? At which times of the day? How does your window dressing affect the amount of sunlight in your home? Number 3. Where does glare bother you? Is the glare from sunlight, light fixtures, or reflections? Number 4. During the same 12-hour period, notice moments when you have trouble seeing. Ask yourself where you are sitting or standing when you find yourself frustrated. What are the lighting conditions? Now that you have a more thorough understanding of the lighting conditions in your home and your particular lighting needs, you can use the information in the rest of this chapter to choose the changes that will be most effective for you. Improving lighting in your home. Lighting is very personal. What works for one person may not work for another, so you may have to experiment a bit with furniture arrangements, window dressings, fixtures, and light bulbs to find the combination that works best for you. The next few sections outline lighting options. A list of the most popular suggestions for people with macular degeneration follows. Using sunlight in your home. While you are choosing new fixtures or bulbs or rearranging the lighting in your home, don't forget to use your free lighting, sunlight. Allow as much sunlight as you can into your home without tolerating too much glare. Sunlight is brighter and more powerful than artificial light. You can often see color contrasts or read better with sunlight than with lamps. If you do have bright afternoon light in your home, take your clothing choices for the following day to the sunniest room to make your selection, rather than choosing your clothing in the morning when your home is relatively dark. You may also want to rearrange your furniture or rooms to take advantage of the rhythms of sunlight. For example, if you like to drink coffee and do a crossword puzzle in the morning, You may be better off relaxing in a sunny bedroom than struggling to see in a sunless kitchen or living room. If you do sit in the sun, position your chair or couch with its back against the window so that the light falls on your page or coffee cup. You may also be better off replacing your heavy drapes with sheer curtains or blinds to allow as much sunlight as possible while reducing glare. Vertical blinds are an excellent option because then you can track the sun all day. Light fixture options. There are essentially three categories of home light fixtures: fixed overhead lighting, inflexible floor or table lamps, and flexible desk lamps, gooseneck type or hinge type. Overhead fixtures provide basic overall room light, but are generally not adequate for detailed work. Inflexible floor or table lamps are also good for overall room light, but do not always provide as much light as we assume they do. They tend to throw light toward the ceiling and the floor, providing only moderate to low light at eye level. Traditional shade lamps are the worst, since the shades mute most of the light and throw the rest all over the room. If your incandescent ceiling or floor fixtures aren't adequately lighting your rooms, try using at least 100-watt bulbs. For brighter light, you may consider a halogen pedestal lamp that sits on the floor, also called a torchiere. Many people buy one for the room in which they spend the most time. Halogen lamps do have one serious drawback. They are very hot and can cause fires if they are knocked down on carpets or positioned too closely to drapes. For this reason, they are now sold with protective metal screens over the bulbs. Use them with caution. For desk lamps, many people prefer halogen fixtures and bulbs because they are so bright. A 50-watt halogen reflector bulb gives light equivalent to a 150-watt incandescent bulb. However, some people find halogen desk lamps too hot. The most convenient fixture for detailed work is a gooseneck or hinge-type adjustable table or floor lamp with an indoor floodlight bulb. They are particularly good if you are sensitive to glare, because you can position the light beam below the level of your eyes and still direct strong illumination onto a page or project. You can adjust the brightness of desk and floor lamps by moving them farther away, choosing fixtures with dimmers, or changing light bulbs. Light bulb options. There are four different types of light bulbs available at hardware stores and superstores and through low vision catalogs: fluorescent, halogen, chromalux, and incandescent. Incandescent bulbs come in two models: regular or floodlight. Each type has advantages and disadvantages. Fluorescent and halogen bulbs provide the brightest light, which many people appreciate, but they do have some drawbacks. Fluorescent bulbs can only be used in fixtures designed for them. They also tend to cause glare, which can be extremely irritating. Halogen bulbs cause less glare, but tend to be more expensive, and they are sometimes too bright, too hot, or too heavy for desk lamps. For these reasons, halogen bulbs are best used in pedestal floor lamps. Traditional halogen bulbs fit only in halogen lamps, but halogen reflector bulbs do have standard bases that can fit any lamp. Chromalux and incandescent bulbs are somewhat similar. Chromalux bulbs are available in 60 and 100-watt frosted glass. They're designed to imitate natural light and are cooler than ordinary incandescent bulbs. Incandescent bulbs, which are the familiar regular light bulbs, are cheaper and more widely available. In higher wattages, however, they tend to be hot and are not quite as bright as fluorescent or halogen. For this reason, incandescent indoor floodlight bulbs are very popular with people who have macular degeneration, because they provide brighter, more focused light without adding more wattage or heat. We often find that they are the best bulbs of all. Caution. When you purchase new fixtures, make sure that your electrical system can handle any extra wattage. When you use stronger bulbs in new or existing fixtures, make sure you follow the manufacturer's instructions. Using the wrong light bulb in a fixture can ruin your fixture and short your entire electrical system. Popular suggestions for increasing light. Replace your incandescent light bulbs that are less than 75 to 100 watts with 75 to 100 watt bulbs. For detailed work, use a 45 or 65 watt incandescent indoor floodlight or a halogen reflector bulb. Buy a small, inexpensive gooseneck or hinge-type lamp with an indoor floodlight bulb. Make sure it is easy to carry and adjust. Take this lamp with you around the house to places where you most frequently need light for detailed work, such as reading or setting laundry dials. Perch it on tabletops, sinks, counters, appliances, or desks. In the areas where you use it most frequently, consider purchasing one to place there permanently. You can find models for $10 to $25 at local hardware stores or superstores that sit on any surface, screw into walls, or clip onto desktops or bed frames. Buy a bright, lightweight flashlight or pen light. Make sure it's not too heavy. Carry it in your pocket or purse. Use it to read labels in the grocery store and menus in restaurants, and to see things around your house, such as clothes in the closet, stove dials, alarm systems, thermostats, and cleaning fluid bottles in the garage. Camping stores are often the best sources for strong, lightweight flashlights. Popular suggestions for reducing glare. Replace irritating fluorescent lights with incandescent light fixtures. Use at least 75 to 100 watt incandescent bulbs, indoor floodlight bulbs, or Chromalux bulbs. Cover Formica countertops, glass tables, or shiny polished wood tables with tablecloths or towels. Cover polished hardwood floors or tile floors that reflect glare with heavy area rugs. Make sure you secure all rugs so they do not slide and you do not trip on their edges. Move mirrors that reflect glare. Use Venetian blinds, or better yet, sheer curtains to reduce sun glare while allowing as much sunlight as possible into your home. To reduce unavoidable glare in your home, grocery stores, and restaurants, wear a pair of light yellow or plum noir wraparound glasses. These glasses can be worn alone or over your prescription glasses. They're available through the Low Vision catalogs listed in Appendix C for $15 to $20. To reduce glare outside, wear a pair of blue blocker sunglasses, or add blue blockers to your existing sunglasses or regular glasses, or wear a pair of dark yellow noir glasses, either by themselves or over your regular glasses. Blue blockers will increase the tint of your lenses and cut glare, but they will not decrease the overall amount of light you perceive. In other words, unlike regular sunglasses, they will not make the world look darker. Talk to your optician about these options and see Chapter 3 for more information on blue blockers. Lighting in public places. Unfortunately, we often get too much sunlight outside and too little inside. Many restaurants keep their lighting low to create ambiance, while grocery stores blast fluorescent lights to highlight their products. So what can you do? Keep a pair of lightly tinted wraparound glasses with you to reduce indoor glare. See popular suggestions for reducing glare. And carry a small flashlight or pen light for reading print or identifying objects in poorly lit stores and restaurants. When you dine out, request a table with good lighting or one near a sunny window. Sit with your back to the window so that the sunlight falls on the menu and on your plate. If you find a restaurant with particularly good lighting and a friendly staff, compliment them and give them your business. Restaurants need to know that low lighting and fluorescent lighting can be extremely inconvenient for their customers and can discourage seniors from returning. Remember, you aren't alone. There are more than 1.5 million Americans with advanced macular degeneration who need more light to see. They like to dine out, too. This is the end of Side 6, continuing on Side 7.